Bob Novak. Welcome to Power and Witness. We taped a show with you today. Just wanted to do a little follow-up, and maybe we could tell me some of the stories, encounters over the years at Brother House that have inspired you, that maybe you come back to or think of every now and then.
Thanks for asking me here, Father. Appreciate it. And maybe just a brief background, assuming people don't know what Brother House is, just maybe to set that up. So I'm with a Catholic lay organization, Legion of Mary, which is a worldwide organization of, I think, close to 6 million or more Catholics. And the works that we do within my presidium, my Legion of Mary group, is called the Brother House, which is quite an outlier to typical Legion of Mary type work. Legion of Mary typically focuses on spiritual works of mercy as opposed to corporal. In the work that we do at the Brother House, we also have corporal works of mercy. So our ministry is located in suburban Philadelphia in a town, Norristown, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. It's the seat of the Montgomery County Courthouse, just as a point of reference. And it's in a very bad neighborhood. It's a very, very bad zip code. We're on Green Street in the middle of town, and it's quite drug infested. And the work that we do is, it's currently open only on Wednesday nights. And we open our building up to any man 18 and older that wants to come in. We offer clothing, we offer some food and drink, coffee. We have a shower facility. We have a large screen TV. We let the men watch, you know, sports and stuff. We have a pool table. So that's more of the secular corporal type of things. But we also pray with the men. One of the key works of Legion of Mary is miraculous medal devotion, and we give out a ton of miraculous medals, pray with the men, give them prayer cards, and we say the rosary. We do not proselytize the men at all, but there are many men that do come, say the rosary with us, and if they don't, you know, most of the men actually don't come to the rosary, but we'll go around the room and ask them for prayer intentions and the like.
And it's about six guys or so?
Our presidium, our group, is six men right now. So we're a small band of brothers. We're active legionaries. Legion of Mary membership has two basic types. Active members, who go to a 90-minute presidium meeting every week, and then they do at least 2 hours of an assignment. Typically, that would either be a parochial group that's taking work assignments that the pastor wants done within his parish, or other groups that might visit nursing homes, hospital visitation, you know, things like that. So that's your more typical Legion of Mary type group.
And your apostolate day is like Saturday or something, or? You're 1 day a week.
It's on Wednesday night. The group's been in operation since probably 1967, I believe, is the earliest records that I've seen of our group and when Brother House in particular started. We've been there, quite a long time. But and it used to be two nights a week. It used to be like Sunday and Wednesday. Mm. But post-COVID, during the COVID tide, we did keep our doors open, so to speak, but we had to move everything outside. So we set up tents in the parking lot with propane heaters all winter long. And we would bring guys in one at a time with masks and all that stuff that was going on. But right now we're only open Wednesday evenings.
Wow. And sometimes special events, maybe to like watch the Eagles is Sunday.
We have had Super Bowl parties there. We've done a Thanksgiving thing. We'll do a hot dog night or.
Yeah. Okay, and you've been at it a long time. What what kind of keeps you coming? Well, let me first ask you about the miraculous metal devotion.
Mm-hmm.
I know on the metal it says, Mary conceived without sin, pray for us, have recourse to thee.
Right.
And is that, I know that there's a Jewish convert, I'm just forgetting his name, but he talked about, he had, Our Lady had appeared to him in dreams and brought him in, he became Catholic. But he asked her one time, what's your favorite prayer? And she said it was that prayer, the Mary conceived.
I haven't heard that particular anecdote.
Yeah.
But it certainly doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. But to have the devotion to miraculous metal, so you wear a medal, and is there other prayers like you would say often? Or
Well, part of legionary duty requires the daily recitation of the catena. It's there's a lot of Latin terminology within Legion of Mary circles that's almost entirely based off terminology from the Roman army, the ancient Roman army. Catena means chain. So it's the one prayer, and it's basically the Magnificat with a short intro and a short outro added to the Magnificat. Mm. So that's the central prayer of every legionary, whether you're an active member or whether you're an auxiliary praying member,
right.
Is the catena on a right. daily basis.
Now you came back to the faith. You're raised Catholic, your Polish background. Was the Polish background, is that where the Marian devotion came from?
Likely. Yeah. I mean, the Poles in general mm-hmm. Are devoted to the Blessed Mother, totus tuus, right?
Yeah.
My mom was Ukrainian, but Eastern European right. in general, all those countries did have a... So, I mean, there was always a statue of the Blessed Mother. My mom said the rosary. In later years, my mom and dad both became auxiliary members. They both joined the Legion as auxiliary praying members.
Is that before you were active in it? Or
no, it was because I was active in it.
Okay.
It was, during my time in there with the Legion. But,
Because you came back early 80s. That wasn't a time in America known for great Marian devotion.
No.
But maybe Philly area was different with all the...
Father, I'm an outlier in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, especially in my spirituality, I'm not necessarily going along with the trends.
Mm-hmm.
And when I come, when I do something, I do it totally. I don't do much halfway. So when I decided to come back to the church and the sacraments, it was all the way.
Mm-hmm.
When I decided to join a Legion group, I was in it all the way. So, but I also feel led. There's a real sense that Our Lady took me down this road. No Marian apparitions here. Haven't been blessed with any of that. I probably couldn't handle it if I was, but, when it seems to me that when the Blessed Mother gets involved in something, there's just such a gentleness and such a rightness about what she does. You can just seems to tell that her finger is leading and guiding certain things, certain events. Mm. That happen, and for right or wrong, that's my impression of things as they, to me.
Yeah, I agree. I even heard someone describe sometimes the saints in general, but this one young woman was talking about Saint Edith Stein, and
right.
she said she herself experienced this. She felt like Edith Stein chose her to, and really drew her to. Have this devotion to her, and so she gives talks on feminine genius and everything this woman does now. But it's like I feel like Our Lady definitely. I had my own experience too. I felt like I was a Sunday Catholic, but Our Lady pulled me to herself and into the church. Consequently, because of that, it was just like
You say Our Lady did it. So did you have a particular family devotion to the Blessed Mother? Was a rosary devotion?
Well, my father got sick. I went to college I think it was my second semester. He got diagnosed with cancer, given a year to live. He's like 45 years old.
And, wow.
So they were from New Orleans. So they grew up in pre-Vatican II church and had all the devotions and everything. And so they started praying the rosary for his healing. And I was in and out of away at college and back. But yeah, they taught me how to pray the rosary and the Magnificat mentioned. And so, and then also I went to a Marian apparition site in Georgia, Conyers, Georgia, and had a powerful experience there. And just started, it's like early 90s, and just trying to live, you know, everybody, every prayer group seemed like they were receiving messages at that time. And so I just started
living. Bayside.
Yeah. And so they were just basically the commonality was pray the rosary every day, you know, do some penance, go to mass every day, go to confession, and listen to a Fulton Sheen tape on adoration. And,
oh, that guy's great.
Yeah. You strike me as very, I did a year at St. Charles and very Philadelphia type person, or I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the voice or something.
The accent. The accent. Hey, yo, Adrian.
You used to work in City Center, right? You said you commuted there to work for your job.
I did commute to Center City college years. Yeah. And then I did work in town there post-college.
Yeah.
I had an art studio there and then got a couple of in-house jobs at different graphic agencies.
And looking back at it, what, like that Philadelphia Catholicism, because, you know, I grew up in North Alabama, and so I just felt like Catholicism was just another denomination. And then I drive up to Philadelphia with my community to go to seminary, and it's like, you see the cathedral there, you see this huge seminary. It was like, I'd never seen a Catholic church like that with this history, this presence, you know.
Well, certainly Philadelphia has a larger per capita Catholic population than Alabama.
Yeah.
What is it, 3% down here? Or?
Yes, yeah, maybe not even, I don't think. But yeah, it just, did that help you, like that kind of foundation or that kind of cultural expression, like it's in the culture, did that help you or?
Good question. Don't know that I've ever thought about that or not, whether, I mean, if you're talking about early 80s, you know, Catholicism wasn't necessarily popular, so to speak.
Right.
Certainly not going to an art school, which certainly tends to be more liberal-minded, you know, in the population. I don't know. I don't know that I can say that definitively there was anything about the Philadelphia area that if I pointed to anything, it would be family and the Polish tradition that I grew up in.
Your parents were born here or were they born in?
My folks are first generation America.
Okay.
So my dad's parents were Polish immigrants. My mom's parents were Ukrainian immigrants.
Mm.
So there was a bit of, you know, old country influence in the way that I was raised, that certainly influenced my faith, but.
Were you kind of an outlier at art school?
No. So that was, during the time when I was in art school, I can't say that I was outlier, but I was more in step with the general student population, you know, was certainly not Catholic. There weren't any, you know. So that was the period of time, maybe 4 years of my life where I, you know, kind of went on my own, really didn't care about going to mass and stuff.
Yeah.
Going to the sacraments was, you know, unheard of, but, you know, it wouldn't happen. I can remember one story where, just to sort of fly under the radar, so to speak. My folks thought I was still going to mass, but I would just jump in the car, go down to the train station, hang out by the river for an hour, and then go home. And they didn't ask for a receipt. Like I didn't have to bring the bulletin home to prove I went there. You know, they just took it at face value, you know, but.
I talked to another Polish guy. He's right about your age or a little bit older.
I'm 65.
Yeah, he was up in New York and he would go by and get the bulletin, but he wouldn't go to church and bring it home, show his parents. But
that's the receipt.
Well, the other thing, like with Philadelphia, yeah, our seminary chapel is bigger than our cathedral here in Birmingham. St. Coleman's Parish down the road from us, that's bigger than our cathedral here. And then the cathedral of Philly is like magnificent. I mean, so I don't know. You have a lot of structures, institutions, but it was, maybe we talk a bit more about the story of meeting, of seeing the poor on your way to work. And you told me a little bit more to the story where it was kind of a contrast with people you were with. Describe
yeah,
that.
I can go into that. Sure. So during that period of time where I was decidedly not practicing my faith at all, I think I can see in hindsight where I was being led, and my heart was being softened. Of all things, I remember carrying in my shoulder bag, you know, with my art supplies and stuff in it. Somewhere along my travels, somebody gave me a little green New Testament Gideon's Bible. Obviously not Catholic, but I would read that. They had payphones at the time, and people used to leave these little Bible tracts in, you know, little cartoon things, little pamphlets and stuff. And I would pick those up and I would read them. But, I guess I never really lost my faith, but I certainly walked far away from it. But the bigger thing that sort of led me to desiring to serve the homeless was my commutes to art school, taking the train into Center City, getting off at Reading Terminal, and especially in the winter months, walking the subways because it was warmer, and walking past homeless people that you'd see day after day. You actually wouldn't see the people. You know, the people were invisible in a sense. They'd be bundled up or hiding in a box, or, you know, some people would sit there and beg. And it just, you know, and the smell, the stinky smell of the urine in the subways and these people, it just, it worked on me. It worked on me and it worked on me till eventually, though, in later years, it drew me to that, to minister to these people in some manner, right. You know.
And when you were in art school, that tends to be more liberally minded people. Did that kind of pull you out of the church further? Or?
Sure.
It did.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, it did. That they're your peers, right? Yeah. So you kind of want to fit in with what your peers are doing. Yeah. And let's face it was fun. It was fun going out to party and trying to live the carnal life, and have fun and don't worry about this religion stuff.
Yeah. And we think that artistic sensitivity maybe made you more sensitive to the poor. If I don't know if that's necessarily true or not. If artists are more sensitive emotionally.
I am. I'll admit it. I think I am somewhat sensitive in a lot of ways. But I'm not sensitive in a way that, I'm in the trenches, okay? I get my hands dirty. I've changed the shoes and helped guys that are incontinent, get changed in the shower, and be dirty and give food to people that are, literally on the sidewalk sleeping in a wheelchair. Right. So I would consider myself to be sensitive emotionally in a lot of ways, but as far as getting down and dirty and nitty gritty, I'm not at all.
Right. And when you do that, did you have certain encounters there that as you mentioned in the show, Matthew 25, that, you know, what you did to the least, you did to me. Did you have a sense of God's presence or Jesus' presence in them?
Well, as we talked about earlier, the slogan, if you will, of the Brother House, we have in our kitchen, a big on our kitchen wall and on the door as you enter Brother House, is let every man who comes here be served as Christ. So mm-hmm. that's our Legion of Mary method, charism, mm-hmm. is to see and serve Christ in everybody that we meet, especially in legionary duty, as Mary would, to try to be another Mary to everyone that we see. And honestly, that's very challenging with a lot of the guys that that come in to the Brother House. You know, you're dealing with drug addicts, ex-cons, people that are living in the hood, people that don't have jobs, that are you name it. Okay, so there, it's a gritty crowd, to say the least. But again, we're located in a hub of drug traffic on the street where we're at. However, we managed to do that. The guys respect us very much. I would say more than not are very grateful for what we give them.
Right.
And we try to give them more. We're not there to see how many pair of underwear we can give out, or socks, or how many cups of soup, or we're really there to try to connect, and like to see and serve Christ and become friends with people. Maybe show them the face of for like maybe normalcy or a good faith. They know we're Catholic. Mm-hmm. So sometimes just giving a friendly face or remembering their name from 1 week to the next. Because a lot of these guys that come in are just they're so marginalized that they're just somebody. They're just another dirty face addict. But if you can remember their name, and you can remember what their struggle might be. Like there's a homeless guy that just finished up chemo treatments. He's got cancer. And we talk to him and support Support him with friendship, if nothing else.
Right, right.
And
I think Mary, to have a house dedicated to her, Brother House, with that Legion of Mary spirituality, I think she can really make it a home. I was up at Madonna House for like a month up in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and it's called Madonna House, right? And they have a great hospitality, because people can come and anybody can come and stay, and you work in the community, and it, you can just sense of Mary's presence there. And another, they told me, other people comment on that, but it's something about maybe a house that has a devotion to her, or the house she chooses, or whatever, to kind of make her presence felt.
No doubt.
It goes a long way to fostering this hospitality.
It does.
And I was struck what you said on the show at the end. I kind of threw a question at you about, is there a gospel passage that kind of speaks of maybe something you've learned or experienced? And you said Matthew 25, but you said that where it says, I was naked and you clothed me, I was hungry, you fed me, but you said I was unloved and you loved me, which, and I thought that's interesting. That's the first thing, because you would think, you're working with the poor, usually it'd be the naked part or the food part or the
corporal works.
Yeah. But you said, I loved that. I was unloved and you loved me. Like, just to be friends with somebody, just to pay attention, like learn their name and stuff, how people hunger for that. They want to be known and loved.
I just finished reading Story of a Soul, and the little flower has, talks towards the end of one passage that was something from her that I wrote a sticky note to myself on to remember, and I haven't memorized the verbatim, but she talks about the value of a smile, and that that's God's work too, just like I said, if you remember somebody's name, it's like, what, you know, it resonates. And if you can just do nothing less than give somebody a cup of coffee and give them a smile and a little, you know, look them in the eyeball let dignity is another word that comes to mind, you know. It's dignity that they don't receive in general, most of these guys.
Is there one guy over the years, or two guys or something, that you remember well, or that you kind of come back to that
maybe? I'll start on a positive note. We had a guy that was Episcopalian. He recently died about 3 years ago, but he would come to the rosary, and he was interested, and he had a lot of anger issues with God. He had over the years struggled with a same-sex type of a thing, but he always came to our rosaries. And this would be back in the 80s. I told you I left for a while and then came back within the last 6 years to active service again. But he eventually converted. And I was his sponsor at his Catholic confirmation. And that happened maybe 2 years before he passed away.
Yeah.
And, you know, the legionaries got him to, we were able to follow up with that. We claimed his body from the hospital, and saw to it that he got a Christian burial, which is another work of mercy.
That's right. Yeah. And you all have a sizable Latino population. Do they respond to the Marian devotion in particular?
Most of them are Catholic,
right?
Especially the Mexican, but even the Honduras, almost all of them. So we do try our best. We're not one of our members is good conversationally. I'm marginally conversational. The rest of them, the rest of our four guys, don't really know Espanol, right? But as a group, a part of our Legion Mary weekly devotion prayer service is we pray the rosary. And every week, when we say the rosary as a group, we say two decades in Spanish. And we build on that. We offer miraculous medals in Spanish with Spanish, prayer card explanations of the medal. And now, because we've learned the Spanish prayers, we can, give somebody a miraculous medal and, say a couple prayers with them in Spanish. And again, it's a seemingly small thing, but sometimes the small things either add up or they may be bigger than you think they are. And the guys are always grateful. They're shaking your hand.
And do you bring some of your artistic skills and stuff to the house? Are you putting stuff on the wall or making anything? Or
we have, I sent you some pictures earlier. I don't know if you saw them, but another part of our ministry is prison ministry. So there's a large state prison facility, Graterford. It's Phoenix Prison now, that we would visit. We're still doing prison ministry, but not at Graterford. We're at Montgomery County Prison. And we actually see a lot of the Brother House guys. We'll go to a prison rosary service, and guys will come in, and it's like, what are you doing here? Like, I don't want to know what you're doing here. But where was I going with this? I lost my...
The rosary devotion, or Because I've been told by some missionaries, like, they'll go into areas that have lost the practice of faith. When they start praying the rosary, people come out for it. It's like something, it's so embedded in that, like, the Latino culture.
They certainly respond to that. And I would say, generally speaking, the Latinos are very appreciative in general.
Oh, was it the artistic ability?
Oh, the artistic thing.
Is there something you made when they went to the prison ministry or anything like that?
Yeah, so it was a crucifix. So one of our members, he's passed away now, John Mullen, God rest his soul. So the prisoners made a large crucifix that's hanging on our wall. I recently restored it, but it's entirely made from paper towels and paint, because they it's all contraband. So these prisoners, if you take a look at maybe the pictures I sent you, it's really neat what they did, and it's held up over the years. It's almost like the tilma of Juan Diego. It's like, is it this, you know, this is paper towels that these guys made, but they formed it. It's got to be 18 inches tall actually there are a few other things that guys have done, you know, graffiti style ballpoint pen things. There is some, I should put a compilation together of some of the Brother House art we've gotten.
I'm kind of curious, like you work for a bank with graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
Was it kind of like a corporate headquarters you worked at, or how did that, I usually don't associate that with banking, but what kind of, how did that?
Yeah, well, it's the marketing. So there's a ton of marketing and advertising materials that banks produce. You know, it's certainly not what I consider creative. You know, it's not like fine art by any means. It's really nuts, and, you know, pamphlets and posters and signage and
letterhead stuff and
all that stuff. Yeah. So, and that's how I got sort of was so I had been commuting to Wilmington from Valley Forge, which is close to an hour each way. And when COVID hit, we were set up to work from home, and the position I was in, I was allowed to. So now I'm ad infinitum, able to work from home, and the work from home part of it enabled me to watch television during the day and ESPN. So I got to see Father Mark do the morning mask.
EWTN, right?
What did I say?
ESPN.
Did I say that?
Oh, I'm sure, God. An Eagles fan, you have to watch.
I don't. I'm probably the only male in Philadelphia that doesn't watch pro sports or NFL. But I was at one point in my career, I was actually creative director for the Philadelphia Eagles merchandise catalog. So that was more creative. And we would go down to NovaCare, and you know, I met Andy Reid and McNabb, and we would photograph the players and the cheerleaders and whatnot during that. But, you know, I didn't watch the Super Bowl either.
Well, thank you so much, Bob, for talking with us. Anything else came to mind you wanted to mention? Or
we talked a little bit about an anecdote, but there's one striking one that I'll share maybe as we leave. So this would have happened maybe about 4 years ago or 5 years ago. It was a hot summer night. I was working serving in the clothing room as you come into Brother House. We kind of switch duties around, so sometimes, so everybody gets a little handle on everything. And I'm in there, and one of our Brother House guests comes in, and he says, "Brother Bob, there's a naked guy out in the parking lot." I'm like, shocked. What do you mean? Like, this can't be. Well, wasn't completely naked, but he was wearing a hospital gown with the back untied. So practically, right? So we took him in. So here, somehow, this guy who was an Army veteran, he had been doing some kind of labor job probably under the table in Philadelphia, and he fell out of like a second story window of wherever it was, house that he was working in, and severely injured his leg. He was taken to the hospital. They treated him, didn't keep him over, and discharged him in a hospital robe. That's all, and I won't say what hospital it was. But I mean, this happened, and the best that they could do was put him into an Uber and ask him, you know, where do you want to go? Well, this guy had been to the brother house before. Fortunately, it was on a night we were open. So basically, this guy was discharged from the hospital with nothing, not hardly clothes on his back. He asked to come to the brother house. We happened to be open. There's Our Lady's finger again. You know, I can't deny that, you know, all these events, you know, helped him out, and they dropped him off, and we brought him in, we treated him as best we could. We got him shower and new clothes. But that was just, and last week there was a guy came in, he had frostbite on his toe. His toe was, this particular guest is, been on the streets with drugs so long, he's practically feral. He almost communicates with just grunts and groans. But his toe was black. It was like half of his big toe and his one foot was cut off. It looked like a piece of electrical tape that was stuck over top of the, I can show you a picture of it if you want, but you probably don't want. But, you know, in fact, I need to follow up on that. I think he's still in the hospital and he's undergoing a psych evaluation. But yeah, there's some pretty gritty things that come along our way from time to time.
You mentioned, yeah, you had this conversion experience. You went to Brother House, and then you felt like it was time to focus on your family. At least two children, right? And
yep.
Like for 20 years. And then coming back the last 6 years to Brother House, how has that affected you at church? Like when you go to pray, did it really change that in a certain perceptible way? Or
to answer that, I could only say growth. Mm-hmm. Before I came back to the Brother House, I went for 2.5 years to St. Charles Borromeo Seminary, discerning a vocation to the permanent diaconate. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I discerned out of that after a conversation with my pastor, who noted that I was constantly talking about Brother House, mm-hmm. and I didn't realize it. So, you know, the seminary experience got me into the divine office, which I still continue to say. And, you know, it helps me grow. I don't know that, you know, it's not necessarily leaps and bounds, but I think it's, you know, how our Lord and our Lady lead people. You know, there's, I can see growth in myself spiritually.
Yeah. I think it's St. Paul, doesn't he say, like, or maybe it's James, that the true worship is serving the widows and orphans. Yeah, that's true religion is sometimes it can seem disconnected, but I guess I know when I was in seminary, and later at Mount St. Mary's, we would go into mm-hmm. D.C., work with missionaries of charity, and yeah, they had like an AIDS unit and stuff, and it was it did feel very real, you know. Sometimes prayer should feel very real, but sometimes it can feel like ritual sometimes. And,
sure.
But there's something very visceral about
it. What was the saint that said, you know, the holiness is in washing the dishes or something that line?
That's Brother Lawrence. I found him there amidst the pots and pans, right? Yeah, doing those simple tasks, he found God.
Yeah. But, you know, that's... You know, even, you know, it's in a sense, it's kind of hard to see Christ in some of the guys who are dropping F-bombs and, you know, they're really from the hood with all the lingo and lifestyle and cigarettes. You know, so it's like, is Jesus in there? Like, where is he at? You know, and then you go home at the end of the night after you. You did some sort of good for the person, even if you prayed for them and they didn't know it or stuff like that. And then there's another way where you could sort of feel that, yeah, Christ is in that person. He's in there, you know, and little by little, you know, he's going to bring him out. I mean, one of the things that when we say the rosary every night, you know, part of our intention is, you know, that that not one of our men would be lost. You know, in November, part of every Legion of Mary group says has a mass said for deceased legionaries. We do that, and we also add an additional mass for all the guys that are deceased from the Brother House. Anyone who's ever signed our book, we pray for their souls that not one would be lost. So, hey, it's Mary. You know, there's she can do it. And
do the women that are part of the Legion, do they ever come to the Brother House to do ministry or?
We're a men's presidium, and because we have shower facilities things like that, you know, we, you know, adding female population into that mix would just be, it's not a good mix. Yeah. Yeah. We do have women on occasion that will sit in the parking lot, like guys will bring them in, so we'll give them a miraculous medal, you know, a cup of coffee or iced tea, maybe something to eat, and just try to, not to be misogynistic, but you know, this is a men's social.
Right.
I can hear one guy saying, "Don't you know this is the Brother House? That's why they call it that. It's for the brothers. You can't come here." You know, it's like, all right, take it easy. Well, you know.
Yeah, I would think that would have a charism of brotherhood. And you mentioned Band of Brothers, and that would be interesting to see. I mean, obviously both are needed, but Bob, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, Father.
Thanks for coming down, doing the shows.